Okay, next question is from Donna from Labrador in Australia. This relates to how to lift depression fast. Hello, what are your thoughts on depression and grief? I'm particularly interested in grief, not from the loss of a loved one, but from the loss of a life you thought you would have that is ongoing. For example, a child born with severe handicaps. Requiring lifelong care, or a couple who had planned a lively retirement, and out of illness or accident, one must become a full-time carer for the other. Really enjoying the course. Thank you, Donna.
Okay, thanks. What are my thoughts on depression and grief? I won't give you all my thoughts on depression and grief, but I'll just say a little bit first about grieving for a person, then speak more specifically about what you're talking about here, Donna, grieving the death of a life that you've been expecting. Okay, so as we're, in grief, there are supposedly stages people are supposed to grow through, Freudian slip. Of grieving, such as shock and disbelief and denial and sadness and depression, anger and guilt, and finally acceptance and that kind of thing. And I've noticed, though, that people don't have to experience grief in these ways or in any particular order. I've even noticed that people who've had much grief in their life may even get better at grieving and go through the process quicker, which is quite a strange thought because we don't usually think of the grieving process as a skill in which we can improve in some ways. But anyway, that's kind of an aside, really. So no one has to experience all of the particular set of emotions in any set order. Okay, I think that's a bit of a myth. And if they're not experiencing this stage by now, then there's some kind of a problem. People are a bit different in the way they respond to things. People aren't bound to be in denial or in any part of the common features of grief. Okay, the other thing that can block the grief process is post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And I've seen it where the client is stuck at the stage of seeing the loved one die or hearing about the death and so forth. And they, so really they're not, they're so horrified and terrified still, maybe years later because of the PTSD is still there, that the whole process has got stuck somehow. They might have flashbacks to that time and so forth. So I don't really, in a way, see that. It's often mistaken for grief, but it's really PTSD. And so helping lift any PTSD around the death will then free the person to grieve and eventually adjust to life without this person, whilst respecting their memory, of course, and then start to move on. So grief really should only become a concern because, of course, it's a natural phenomenon if it doesn't start to diminish after some months, maybe 4 or 5 months, and the grief-stricken person starts to believe that they can't possibly continue, they can't have a meaningful existence without their deceased loved one. Okay, so that's when it becomes a suitable case for treatment, in a sense, I think. Going into the imagination at this time and projecting to a future and colouring it with it, sort of meaningless, thus colouring it in meaninglessness in the mind without the loved one. How can life have any meaning without this person in my life? And it's a real danger. So grief is a natural phenomenon, but how long does it last and to what intensity? Those are the key questions. We also need to look at our grieving clients' basic emotional needs. Were they solely met through this person who's died? And if so, then the grief will be worse because their sole source of meeting all of their emotional needs has now disappeared. Okay, which is why, incidentally, in parallel, people find it hard to leave cults which were meeting all of their needs, and now suddenly they're bereft and they feel they can't meet their needs in any other areas of life. Okay, so grief tends to be worse if the person doesn't have a strong and supportive social network around them or meaningful work to do. Okay, we may need to help the grieving person gradually meet their needs again in a wider way in their life. Okay, apart from and beyond whatever it is that they're grieving. And also help them contextualize their grieving or even organize the grieving ritualistically. Now, of course, any way of life that we have, we've strongly imagined and started to assume would be our ideal or at least expected way of life, but then it doesn't pan out like that, can cause a kind of grieving for those dashed expectations. Okay, and this is interesting, really interesting question. It's often not necessarily discussed. I didn't sign up for this. People often say, I wasn't expecting this, or it didn't turn out how I thought it would. So the thought behind the prevailing feeling is, this isn't how my life was supposed to turn out. Okay. And I don't know where, you know, who said it was something, but where we got that from, that's an interesting question. But this isn't how I imagined things would be. You know, I don't want to sound glib here, but, you know, when I was a kid at a certain age, I expected adult life to be a cross between a James Bond movie and a Star Wars film, you know. And needless to say, it hasn't really panned out quite like that. You know, although it's taken some interesting turns that I could not have guessed in a million years. Okay, so if we develop really narrow expectations as to what people, things, experiences, and everything should be like, then we'll live lives of constant oscillation between surprise and disappointment. Okay, and this is a really interesting and often not discussed kind of part of human experience, I think. You know, I also think that, you know, when we learn to soften our expectations, we become better able to perceive reality as it is, you know, not what our imagination has constructed it should be like. You know, we don't have to be continually shocked or outraged or bitterly disappointed unless we're being led around by the nose of our own imaginings, really, which have been shaped by our own minds and often by the imaginings of those around us and even society as a whole. Okay, so, you know, what were you expecting? If someone's disappointed, okay, they're grieving a life that they're expecting that isn't there, then, you know, it's, you know, what were they expecting? You know, the aspirational good life may not be your construct. Could be one built by advertisers and other producers of mass media and people around you. Okay, so sometimes I might say to someone, you know, when a bird flies thousands of miles, it catches air currents in its wings. Okay, it hasn't formed exact ideas or imaginings ahead of time as to the strength and location of those air currents. It just exists in that moment and adjusts to what is and how that's ever changing. Okay, and you know, if a child is, I mean, again, I don't want to sound glib, and you know, some situations are very, very difficult for people to adjust to. Okay, and it's, you know, we can certainly respect that. You know, if a child is born with special needs, and, you know, perhaps the parents, you know, that's not what they thought when they planned to have children. Okay. And maybe needs extra care, or if a spouse or other or partner falls ill and declines, and we now have the primary care of looking after them, or, you know, if we ourselves become sick or disabled, or a valued relationship ends, you know, that we thought was there for the duration, then there will be a natural sense of loss, you know, because we have lost something, okay, and that's, you know, but we still need to make that adjustment. You know, we can remind clients it's entirely natural to be upset or sad or even angry during the adjustment period. It's very difficult to be angry in a vacuum. You know, you just feel angry, but there's nothing real to be angry about. You know, you can't really be angry with a child for being born the way they're born, for example, or a spouse for becoming ill. You know, so you kind of know it's irrational, but the anger is still there. We can sort of say, you know, a bit of that for a while is quite a natural response, because, you know, you feel that you've been blocked from getting what you really need in this situation. Okay. And without wanting to sound too bleak here, as the Buddhists have said this, you know, suffering, or at least some suffering, is a kind of inevitable part of life. Okay. But within that suffering, perhaps we can find something, you know, whether it's unexpected help from others or untapped strengths within ourselves, new vistas within ourselves that wouldn't have come out, we wouldn't have explored or discovered or illuminated had not this adversity occurred, okay, or a new appreciation of life itself. You know, these are sometimes compensations, and again, we don't want to sound platitudinous when we talk like this, in what at first appears a new way of living, which might seem entirely bleak, okay. So, you know, sometimes we can look at a landscape and you think it's entirely barren, and if you keep looking, then you might see some colors and some, even some flowers budding and the changing light, and it's not so bad and so forth. And again, I'm not suggesting we glibly say that to a client, or not so crassly, but I think we can remember the truth of that and allow it to inform the way that we do communicate with clients and help them. You know, because really the future isn't some promised land of perpetual love and money and health and happiness, okay? And, you know, it, the future life, like everything else in the abode that we find ourselves in, contains, you know, kind of ever, revolving circumstances and ever-changing patterns of fortune, you know, like the ripples in the air or the ripples in the sea. It's a constant flux. And that's the case for all of us. You know, I don't know what's going to happen to me. And not all of it will be good. You know, utopianism can be just as dangerous as expecting only bad things. So sometimes people have this kind of grief You know, not because of something terrible has happened to them, but because what they all the fantastic good things that they did expect haven't occurred. Okay, so we can ascertain that. And, you know, it's an interesting thing with happiness. You know, we seem to feel moments of true happiness, not when we are continually getting what it is we thought we wanted. Okay, although there's some satisfaction in that at first. But, you know, when we solve problems, there seems to be some kind of human electricity that's released when we have a problem or a challenge and we've risen to it, we've surmounted it. Okay, so having problems and working around them may be the key ingredients to a happier life, weirdly enough, you know, as long as the problems can be negotiated effectively. And, you know, someone who has learned helplessness, that's because they're, you know, they're depressed and they feel that they feel more helpless than actually they are in reality. Okay, is kind of denying themselves the opportunity for happiness through having problems in that way, which is a kind of weird thought. So working with, when we're working with clients, you know, who are kind of living a very different life to the one they expected to live, we might examine what they were expecting, to you know, check out how realistic that was. And perhaps it was entirely justified. We then might talk to them about their primal basic emotional needs and how they can still meet those needs in a balanced way, but perhaps a diminished way, but still meeting them to some extent. Okay. So a limited diet of those needs, but still getting them in some ways, and we can help them explore how they can still meet those needs, and also encourage their resolve that they can rise to the challenge of these situations. But, you know, we can't make it all everything rosy and okay for them straight away. It is a transitioning experience. There is also research to show that lottery winners and people who become paraplegic have, after 6 months after winning the lottery or becoming paraplegic in an accident, their happiness levels are pretty even again. So we do seem to have an almost happiness immune system that sort of fights off incoming stuff and then gives us some homeostasis again. So again, you have to be very careful not to sound glib. You know, I wouldn't even necessarily say that to a client. But that's something to have in the back of your mind, that people are incredibly resilient and, you know, learn all kinds of things from all situations of life.